Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Anne Ball. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, in earlier times, healers and health workers used strangely named plants for medicinal purposes. Plants with names such as dragon's blood, mandrake root, and devil's snare could be bought at a drugstore called an apothecary. Today, one of the best preserved apothecaries in the United States has been turned into a museum in Alexandria, Virginia. The museum provides interesting examples of medicines used before the development of modern drugs. The Stabler Leadbeater Apothecary served customers for more than 140 years, from 1792 to 1933. When the business failed, the store and its contents were bought. It was redesigned to look as it had in the 18th century. In 1939, it reopened as a museum. Lauren Gleason supervises the museum.
A lot of the medicines that people would have been purchasing here were probably for minor ailments, rashes, skin conditions, the flu, a headache.
The apothecary has many thousands of objects. Some seem strange now, like the bloodletting tools. They were used to take blood from patients in hopes of removing their sickness as well. The treatment was often harmful, however, and ended in the late 19th century. Many famous people visited the apothecary while it was still a business, including America's first president. George Washington and his wife, Martha, lived nearby in the early 1800s at their home of Mount Vernon. But the apothecary had more than medicine.
Lots of other chemicals, like paints and dyes and perfumes, would have been made and sold here.
And, she said, customers could also buy baby bottles, writing instruments, and even clothes-making machines at the store. One bottle at the store holds a poison that was once used to ease pain. The drug, called aconite, comes from the wolfsbane plant. In earlier times, wolfsbane was thought to help control violence by imaginary creatures known as werewolves. In folklore, a werewolf is a human that changes into a wolf during full moons. Jim Williams works at the apothecary.
So if you have werewolf trouble, it gets you through to the next full moon.
Williams added that wolfsbane would also be used to treat pain in human joints. Visitor Christine Zapata from California said she was especially interested in the former store's different plants.
Using all these different herbs and like plant-based medicines that are like coming back now. For me, that's personally most interesting to me because I work in the cannabis industry.
One box at the apothecary used to contain bottles of Coca-Cola. The drinks were first sold in the late 1800s as medicine believed to cure conditions like tiredness and headaches. However, Coca-Cola at that time contained the drug cocaine and could be addictive. Some treatments fell into disuse after it became known they were poisonous. But we continue to depend on many medicines found in the apothecary to heal injuries and cure disease.
Scientists are trying to save Puerto Rico's endangered Amazon parrots after Hurricane Maria destroyed the birds' habitats and food sources. El Yunque is a large national forest on the eastern part of Puerto Rico. Just two of the 56 wild parrots that once lived there survived Maria. The Category 4 storm struck Puerto Rico in September 2017. Scientists report other forests have seen great drops in parrot populations as well. In the 1800s, there were more than a million of the bright green parrots living in the wild in Puerto Rico. By the 1970s, the number was down to just 13 birds, after years of forest clearing. The U.S. and Puerto Rican governments launched a special program in 1972 to help increase the parrot population. That led to the creation of three breeding centers. Just weeks before Hurricane Maria hit, scientists counted 56 wild parrots in El Yunque. That was the highest number in the program's history. Scientists say that even though several parrots have been born in captivity and in the wild since Maria, the species is still in danger. Maricel Lopez oversees the parrot recovery program at El Yunque for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says she is worried about the disappearance of parrots in El Yunque. She said, "It was devastating after so many years of having worked on this project." The Puerto Rican Amazon is the island's only remaining native parrot. The birds only reproduce once a year. More than 460 of the birds are kept inside breeding centers at El Yunque and the Rio Abajo Forest. Scientists have not released any of the birds since Hurricane Maria. A third breeding center in a forest in the western area of Maricao has not been in operation since the storm. Federal and local scientists plan to meet next month to discuss how best to bring back the species. Scientists are considering whether to capture some of the remaining wild parrots and put them in the same cages as birds that are set to be released. This way, the captive birds can learn from the wild birds how to survive in the forests. Another consideration is to release some captive parrots in Maricao, which was not as heavily damaged by Maria. But first, scientists need to make sure the forests can offer food and safe shelter for the birds.
This may seem impossible, but an American company is seeking to change farm animals by cutting or adding to their genes. By using a process called gene editing, the company Recombinetics says it may be able to remove problem-causing genetic traits from some animals. Recombinetics says it can produce cows born without horns, those sharp objects on top of their heads. By using the editing process, the company says it can also breed cows that survive in hot weather. With gene cutting, it says pigs could live and never fully grow up. Why would that be a good idea? When male pigs reach puberty, their meat can have an unpleasant smell. The company must first persuade United States government officials that gene-edited animals are safe and no different than the ones bred the traditional way. To date, no gene-edited animals are sold in the country. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved a kind of salmon genetically engineered to grow fast, but those fish are not yet available. There has been debate as to whether people would want to eat food that comes from gene-edited animals. Last month, the FDA announced an action plan that described the steps it will take to support both plant and animal biotechnology while safeguarding public health. To make this technology more acceptable, Recombinetics is not yet changing animals' genes to greatly increase their growth or productivity. That could make the animals seem strange to people. Instead, the company says it is adding gene-edited traits to ease animals' suffering. It's a better story to tell, Tammy Lee told the Associated Press. She is chief executive officer of the company, based in St. Paul, Minnesota. Cow horns can hurt other cows, animals, and people. Animal rights activists criticize the way farmers currently remove cow horns. They use hot irons or a caustic burning substance to remove the bone. This is how Recombinetics says gene editing works. In a laboratory, workers use an instrument called a molecular pencil to erase or cut, rewrite, remove, or add genes. This newly edited gene then would be included when an animal is impregnated. Recombinetics solves the cow horn problem by cutting out the gene for growing horns, ending the need for painful removals. Once the gene is taken out, all future generations after that first animal will also lack the gene and would not develop horns. Last year, the company had a gene-edited male cow without horns. It fathered several cows. They were also all born hornless and are being raised on the grounds of the University of California, Davis. When the female offspring grow up and begin producing milk, the milk would be tested for any problems. Recombinetics is also developing cows that are less likely to suffer in high temperatures, so they can live in hotter climates. When it comes to raising pigs for their meat, Recombinetics is working with ones that will not go through puberty. When male pigs go through puberty, their meat can develop an unpleasant smell. Currently, farmers castrate the males, removing their sex organs. Animal rights activists say the treatment is painful because it is usually done without medicine to kill the pain. Editing genes to stop pigs from experiencing puberty would make castration unnecessary. The company says that it is doing the work of traditional animal breeders, only much faster and with the exact science of cutting and editing genes. I'm Ann Ball.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States became a nation in 1776. Less than a century later, in the 1860s, it was nearly torn apart. A civil war took place, the only one in the nation's history. States from the North and the South fought against each other. The conflict involved the right of the South to leave the Union and deal with issues, especially the issue of slavery, in its own way. We examine how the Constitution survived this very troubled time in American history. The Civil War was fought from 1861 to 1865. 600,000 men were killed or wounded. In the end, the slaves were freed, and the Union was saved. Abraham Lincoln was president during the Civil War. He said, "The Southern states did not have the right to leave the Union." Lincoln firmly believed that the Union was permanent under the Constitution. In fact, he noted that one of the reasons for establishing the Constitution was to form a more perfect Union. His main goal was to save what the Constitution had created. One cannot truly understand the United States without understanding its Constitution. The document describes America's system of government and guarantees the rights of its citizens. The power of the Constitution is greater than any president, court, or legislature. In the coming weeks, we will tell the story of the United States Constitution, including the drama of its birth in Philadelphia in 1787. Before we do, however, we want to look at how the document provides for change without changing the basic system of government. If you ask Americans about their Constitution, probably the first thing they will talk about is the Bill of Rights. These are the first 10 changes to the Constitution. These 10 amendments have the most direct effect on people's lives. The Bill of Rights guarantees freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press. In fact, all of those and more, including the right to peaceful assembly, are contained just in the First Amendment. The second one states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Fourth Amendment protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Other amendments say that people in criminal cases cannot be forced to make statements against themselves and have a right to a speedy and public trial by a jury. The Bill of Rights also deals with the separation of powers between the federal government and the states. In the words of the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, powers belong to the states unless the Constitution gives them to the federal government or prevents the states from having them. The Bill of Rights was not part of the document signed at the convention in Philadelphia in 1787. The delegates believed that political freedoms were basic human rights. Some of the delegates thought it was unnecessary to express these rights in a constitution. Most Americans, however, wanted their rights guaranteed in writing. This is why most states approved the new constitution only on the condition that a Bill of Rights would be added. This was done, and the amendments became law in 1791. One early amendment involved the method of choosing a president and vice president. In America's first presidential elections, whoever received the most votes became president. The candidate who received the second highest number of votes became vice president. The Constitution was changed after separate political parties developed. Then ballots began to list the names of separate candidates for president and vice president. There were no other amendments for 60 years. The next one was born in the blood of the Civil War. During the war, President Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. That document freed the slaves in the states that were rebelling against the Union. Later, the 13th Amendment banned slavery everywhere in the country, but Lincoln never lived to see it. He was shot a week after the South surrendered. The 14th Amendment, approved in 1868, said no state could limit the rights of any citizen. And the 15th, approved 2 years later, said a person's right to vote could not be denied because of his race, color, or former condition of slavery. By the 1890s, the federal government needed more money than it was receiving from taxes on imports. It wanted to establish a tax on earnings. It took 20 years to win approval for the 16th Amendment. The amendment permits the government to collect income taxes. Another amendment proposed in the early 1900s was designed to change the method of electing United States senators. For more than 100 years, senators were elected by the legislatures of their states. The 17th Amendment, approved in 1913, gave the people the right to elect senators directly. In 1919, the states approved an amendment to ban the production, transportation, and sale of alcohol. Alcohol was prohibited. It could not be produced or sold legally anywhere in the United States. The amendment, however, did not stop the flow of alcohol. Criminal organizations found many ways to produce and sell it illegally. Finally, after 13 years, Americans decided that prohibition had failed. It caused more problems than it solved. So in 1933, the states approved another constitutional amendment to end the ban on alcohol. Other amendments in the 20th century include one that gives women the right to vote. It became part of the Constitution in 1920. Another amendment limits a president to 2 4-year terms in office. And the 26th Amendment gives the right to vote to all persons who are at least 18 years old. The 27th Amendment has one of the strangest stories of any amendment to the United States Constitution. This amendment establishes a rule for increasing the pay of senators and representatives. It says there must be an election between the time Congress votes to increase its pay and the time the pay raise goes into effect. The amendment was first proposed in 1789. Like all amendments, it needed to be approved by 3/4 of the states. This did not happen until 1992. So one of the first amendments to be proposed was the last amendment to become law. The 27 amendments added to the Constitution have not changed the basic system of government in the United States. The government still has 3 separate and equal parts: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. The 3 parts balance each other. No part is greater than another. The first American states had no strong central government when they fought their War of Independence from Britain in 1776. They cooperated under an agreement called the Articles of Confederation. The agreement provided for a Congress, but the Congress had few powers. Each state governed itself. When the war ended, the states owed millions of dollars to their soldiers. They also owed money to European nations that had supported the Americans against Britain. The new United States had no national money to pay the debts. There was an American dollar, but not everyone used it. And it did not have the same value everywhere. The situation led to economic ruin for many people. They could not pay the money they owed. They lost their property. They were put in prison. Militant groups took action to help them. They interfered with tax collectors. They terrorized judges and burned court buildings. The situation was especially bad in the northeast part of the country. In Massachusetts, a group led by a former soldier tried to seize guns and ammunition from the state military force. Shay's Rebellion, as it was called, was stopped. But from the north to the south, Americans were increasingly worried and frightened. Would the violence continue? Would the situation get worse? Many Americans distrusted the idea of a strong central government. After all, they had just fought a war to end British rule. Yet Americans of different ages, education, and social groups felt that something had to be done. If not, the new nation would fail before it had a chance to succeed. These were the opinions and feelings that led, in time, to the writing of the United States Constitution.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.